My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Welcome back to another week and another episode of Pixels and Polygons. I am Darren Hupke for the second time. I forget I have that pre-baked in the beginning. New week and a fun question. This is, I think, the first time we get to answer this question, but what is a game that gets it just right? So whether that's like balance, difficulty, challenge, design, sound, you know, all of the above, none of the above, whatever it may be, but what's a game that we personally feel gets it just right? I have a returning guest to the show for this, Mr. Instruction Derby himself, Nick McConnell, is on the show. You may famously know him as the individual who stood up and shouted from the internet rooftops that Metroid only has one great game in its series. I'm sure he took a lot of flack for that, and I agree with him on that. So not to make any enemies or anything, but they have some good games. You know, there's some entertainment, you know, in that series, but they only have one truly great game, and that is the hot take that Nick shared the other week that I still think about, and I think it's hilarious. But yeah, he, great guest, great conversation. We had a lot of fun chatting. And I have since recorded another episode answering this question. So I hope that more people pick this and we get to talk about this more, because it was just fun dialogue. Just to hear about, you know, personal reasons why a game got it just right. There is no tried and true way to like definitively have everyone agree to the same thing. But, you know, what makes a game just right for you is going to be different for me. And, yeah, that's the whole purpose of doing the show, having conversations and chatting about the games we love. So, thank you for joining me again, Nick, and I look forward to having you on in future episodes as well. You can catch that conversation after the break. For now, the business stuff. So this is like going to be like weeks behind technically on the actual events of it all, but I did manage to actually get a table at Game On Expo out here in Arizona over the last weekend, and was able to sell some books and meet some folks and you know, do the thing that I wanted to do. And it was not easy to do. I had to show up just as an attendee on Friday and asked about getting table space, and you know, they were just like, not sure, hey, I don't know if we have any, you'll have to check back later, et cetera, et cetera. In years past, I know there have been, you know, a couple no-shows. It happens at big conventions and everything. So I bought just a guest like day pass and went down to the floor and went to Artist Alley and just started taking pictures of empty tables with the booth numbers and everything. So walked around, which I don't normally get to do with these things because I'm sitting at a table the whole time. And then once I had my quick fill and quick run, I went right back upstairs, showed those photos to the guys running the show, and they took down my number, took down like those booth numbers, said they wanted to give it a little bit more time. All the while, like, I drove there and parked in the parking structure with all of my inventory and everything all like in the trunk of my car, like ready to go. So after, again, some waiting, some back and forth, some killing some time, finally was able to talk to the guy who runs the show. His name's John Lester. He was just super busy. A lot of things were going on, but a very good guy from my interactions with him. And luckily we were able to make it work, and I was able to get a table. So thank you to John, and thank you to Neil, and thank you to everyone who I was interacting with at Game On Expo to make it happen. I was, you know, super pesky and super persistent, and I'm sure I bothered and annoyed a lot of you all, but for someone like me, it, you know, matters and it helps. And, you know, for what I'm doing, like having a chance to, you know, meet new folks and put my books out in front of people, it's very important. So thank you all for helping me do that and for having a great weekend. That being said, you can still get all the books on my website, pixelsandpolygons.net. All the physical books, Retro Game Zine issues 1 through 4 are available now on there. 32-bit library, volume 1 through 4, in paperback are available. And then I still have some of my deluxe editions. I'm sold out of volume 3, but I do have 1, 2, and 4 available. Otherwise, that's been doing its thing. And then on Patreon, I still do my retro review of the month postcard for any of the paid backers. You also get the a week early of the shows, so you'll be able to hear this episode a week early before it hops into the main free feed for everybody. That is a benefit there. You can also follow the Patreon for free, and like any original writing and posts and one-off things that I do, which aren't super consistent, but you know, I still want to have an outlet for those. Those are there. So patreon.com/Darren Hupke. And on the shop, you can use patreon.com/Darren Hupke/shop and buy digital copies of all of the Retro Game Zine and 32-bit library books. That is the same stuff I always talk about, the same stuff that is going on. Update on 32-bit library volume 5, or the greatest hits volume. I finally started putting letters to the keyboard, to the screen, whatever the metaphor I'm trying to think of here, or analogy, or whatever the thing that I'm trying to do with the thing of that to the screen. I've started doing the write-ups on the games and actually starting the production process of it all. So I'm happy to have finally, you know, had that dam burst and started the work. It's very, you know, once it gets going, like, it's, I just get going with it. So I'm very happy to have finally started that process. And technically I've written 10% of the book already in just over the weekend, which is very cool. Otherwise, that's all I've got. You can follow along at Blue Sky, the only social media I'm on, at darrenhupke.bsky.social and at pixelsandpolygons.net, and find all the links to all my stuff in the show notes below, along with all of Nick's information in the show notes below for this episode. Cool. That's all I got. I rambled on a lot. Just a little recap and everything about what's going on as usual. So thank you for listening. I will get to the episode now, and we will chat with a whole new episode in 7 days. Have a good one. Bye. Welcome back to another episode of Pixels and Polygons, the conversational podcast about video games. I have that in my notes file here. I don't think I ever used that like subheading for the show at all, but that's what I wrote in my notes document here when I was drafting up the idea for the show. A conversational podcast about video games. I have a returning guest now, newer to the stable of guests the show's canon, if we're going to like log that and track the lore. But I have Nick McConnell returning. So welcome back to the show, Nick. Good to have you.
Good to be back. Thanks for having me back. I am thrilled to be a part of the lore. I think that that's fantastic. I'm Nick. I work, my day job is over at Riot doing age ratings compliance for all of our games, which is a fun job, but I'm not here on those terms. I will always make that abundantly clear at the beginning of any show. I'm not here on those terms. I am otherwise I host a stream, a weekly stream. I'm going to have to reboot my thought process here. I host a weekly stream Wednesdays called Instruction Derby, where I read through instruction manuals, old and new, where available. Just sort of hang out with folks like you on stream and check out all the weirdness that video game manuals have to offer. And I'm thrilled to be back.
You're like PBS, you know, it's made possible by viewers like you, you know,
that's right.
Instruction Derby is made possible from viewers like me, you know, helping to participate.
Right.
I'll have links. I didn't mention it in the other show that we recorded just prior to this that I always have to, you know, reveal to people and ruin the magic. in the show notes, I'll have like links to the show and your Blue Sky handle and whatnot. We'll be able to click through and kind of read that if you want to reference that later. Let's jump into an icebreaker then. Let's see if we can get one. I was going to ask this question and I have to throw in a random color in order to make this question like a challenge. And I was about to pick a color that would have, I think, maybe given you an easy answer. So, I don't want to do that. What is one of your favorite characters
who famously wears orange. Let's go with orange.
Oh.
I was going to say red, and I didn't want you to just like shoot back Mario at me and be done with it. So, yeah, what is a character you enjoy whose primary color may be orange?
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's right. Kind of hard.
This one is kind of hard. I'm looking around my room right now for influence. Oh, my God. Let me think about this. Here's maybe a cop-out. I don't know if this is a cop-out. The Castlevania games on the Nintendo, he's not strictly orange, but whichever of the Belmonts it is in the early Castlevanias, they have a very orangey look to them. Yep. Konami used a very orangey style on them, and that has always stood out to me as a particularly interesting way that a character could look in a video game. So when I think of orange video game characters, that's probably my answer, even though he's not technically orange. I guess another answer is for whatever reason, Wario seems orange coated to me, even though I know he's yellow.
Yeah.
He's more yellow. What about this? The basketball from the NBA 2K series. Does that count as an orange character?
Sure. That's right. You're a basketball fan. I meant to ask you about that in between episodes.
Okay. These are painful days. These are painful days for me as a Warriors fan. So that's okay.
I mean, we are recording this. This probably will be out long after the trade deadline. But tomorrow being the trade deadline, there could be a big shakeup with the Warriors. Like, you could be thinking about Draymond Green, but he could be in Phoenix to help bring you back Kevin Durant right now. And we're not aware of that being a possibility until this airs, at which point.
Until this airs. My money, and I'm going to say this, if anybody wants to give me a lot of money for being right about this, I don't think we get Kevin Durant. I think we stay Pat and hold our chips for Giannis next year. That's the basketball minute for me.
Giannis, I've not even run that play in my head about being a possibility. I do think that Phoenix, if they can't get Beal gone to help do something for a now, I think they're going to have some 11th hour decision where I think they do consider a Durant deal of some kind. So if he's not going to go to the Warriors, I think maybe they do consider getting at least some type of assets and, you know, doing something so that maybe then they can then turn around and get like a Butler back again, just to like patch together. Cause their season has not been at all what it needs to be. Like, they're barely floating around like a little over 500 there with the team that they have, and they don't have much assets to go from there. So what do they do? I don't know. That being said, I'm a Knicks fan, so I just live in Arizona, so I am the Phoenix market, and you know, knowing that, I just have to speak to that.
That's good. No, it's always being a fan of a team from out of market is always interesting. I remember living in Los Angeles for a number of years and being a Giants fan at the time, especially, and a Warriors fan, and it just always felt like I was like playing with fire by going outside and my stuff. Everybody was going to be fine, but there was a part of me that kind of enjoyed being the annoying Warriors fan or the annoying Giants fan.
Yeah, I lived in Southern California for years, and the LA fans are very particular about it. And then you bring in regional rivals, and like they really don't want to mess that stuff. So
no.
You were playing with fire. I'm sure it's all good, but like it's a tough spot to be in for sure. Okay. Well, that is, I was going to pivot the question to not one of your favorite characters, but just what is a character you like that wears orange, because it was going to maybe be difficult, but I think the Castlevania answer is good. I think that's Trevor Belmont.
Is that Trevor? That's one
I
of the,
think
what,
it might
Trevor?
Be.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? No, it's Simon, because it's Simon's Quest.
Of course. Yep. Okay.
That makes sense. But maybe it's Trevor in Castlevania 3. Brian Rigsby from Retro Game Books would know. He's a big NES Castlevania fan. And if he's listening, he might be yelling that we're getting this wrong. But I think we got it right. I think we corrected it. Simon, Simon might be 1 and 2, and then Trevor's 3. Feel pretty good about that.
That's the worst. Being wrong on a podcast is the worst, because it's like we say this, there's no way to get feedback from the crowd, right? From chat or anything. And so then our wrong statements get put out there, and then the person's listening to it and they're just yelling at their speakers. Yes. Yeah. Sorry. Apologies if that's the case.
Yep. Well, let's do a this or that. And then we'll get into the main topic at hand. But this or that. Let's do Ninja Gaiden or Shinobi.
Ooh, What era?
See, I've asked this question a couple times, and that is always the follow-up to that question. There's no, this is just this or that. You know, there's not any, it's this or that. Ninja Gaiden or Shinobi.
Then it's got to be Ninja Gaiden. So it's got to be Ninja Gaiden for me. No shade, of course, against my good friend Shinobi.
Nightshade.
Nightshade, that's right, yeah. Oh, man, I found a copy of it for a pretty good deal like a few weeks ago. And it's not like, it's one of those games that's going for like $60 right now. And I wanted to get it, but I was like, no, I should just save my money. Big mistake. I always should have bought it. The lesson was always buy the thing. I really love the PS2 Shinobi stuff, right? Shinobi Nightshade. Like, I love that. Maybe more than I love any of the Ninja Gaiden stuff individually, but I don't have a super strong affinity for the early Shinobi stuff. Arcade, Master System, Genesis. It's not bad by any stretch. It's just I prefer the Ninja Gaiden games. So I think if I had to take them in their totality, Ninja Gaiden, also that the reboot on the original Xbox and then Ninja Gaiden Black, like pretty darn good games. So I think that's where I'm going.
Okay. Locked in, final answer.
Sorry to Shinobi.
Yep. See you later, Shinobi. You got that in.
You're out of here. Smoke bomb out.
Okay. Well, let's keep it rolling then. I feel like we talked a lot more before we got to the main episode on the last episode. So, not that we have to be at a time limit or anything here, but you know, we've got a question to answer then, and we've reached that point where we can ask the main episode question. And this is also a first time question. I've had this. I send to all my guests, I send my little master list of all the questions, and you know, they pick through some of the ones that jump out and stand out to them, but not once has anybody picked this one out yet. So I'm excited to kind of be able to talk this through. I have an idea of one. I can also contribute an answer to, like, again, I don't typically do that, but I have an answer for that if we have time for it at the end of it. But this question, what is an example of a game that is just right to you? That could be like, you know, about its length, its difficulty, its challenge, its style, like, you know, all of the above, whatever it is, but like a game that just hits for you that you feel gets it just right. What is it that you've cooked up and thought up for that answer?
First of all, I'm so happy to hear that this is something that hasn't been asked before. When I learned with the previous show that everybody had asked that question, I was worried that I had become a deeply basic individual. And I'm happy to know now that I am actually, as it turns out, unique. And that's very important to me. I actually have two, one of which I will only kind of briefly mention, and the other one I'll talk a little bit more about. But I'm curious if you're up for it. I would actually like to know yours first, if that's okay with you.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I thought of this as we sat down to record and all that stuff, but, I think that, the God of War 2018, it's 2018, right?
Yep.
Whatever
yep.
year that reboot
that is 2018.
Was.
I know it's 2018 because my younger daughter was born and I played the entirety of that game standing up with her in the chest holder, the ergo baby. Yeah. And so I played the entirety of God of War 2018, with her sleeping, while I was standing up. So 2018, absolutely.
To play like that. You know, you're bringing along your own child in game while you're playing it, you know?
Yeah. It's a game about parenting, you know, it's what's so important.
I think that, I say it's just right. I think that the difficulty and everything about it, like, the combat mechanics, they tried to like evolve over the older God of War game. So there was like some offensive and defensive mechanics that weren't like too convoluted. It wasn't like too many like hold R2 while pressing circle and shifting with the right analog stick to do this. I think it was just enough like control wise, like the pacing of it all. Like whenever you'd be like a big, like, you know, blockbuster moment, there would be some cool downtime to like travel to like, hey, would you like to explore the side content now? Would you like to kind of advance and continue just driving the plot? Like the pacing just kind of felt like really like manageable. And then there were like those optional challenges with like the Valkyrie fights and things like that within the game. And I did all of those. Like I remember just like continuously like kind of coming back at them towards like the end game. And like after I finished it to like, you know, finish them all. And it was like my skill was growing in the game as like I was progressing, so I was able to accomplish like everything. It was just on the normal difficulty. I didn't do it like on that crazy insane difficulty, but like I remember doing that last Valkyrie fight, and it was like you could maybe get two or three times or get hit two or three times and you were done. So it was like just a flawless execution essentially of being able to do it, and like it was just super rewarding. It didn't feel too frustrating. It felt super like balanced to be a great challenge and everything, but that was just like the cherry on top of just the overall like design of it. Like it was open world but not too open. It was explorational but you know, but still like action heavy. It was tight in the controls but still like gave you the freedom to like play your way and everything. And like I think they got it right. I did like the original God of War. I mean 1, 2, and 3, like I love to death. Like I those are amazing games. And the rebooting of it and like what they were doing with it, I was like, you know, what and why? Like, what is this really going to do for this series? Is this necessary and everything? And now, like, I think that's just the best part of like these two most recent God of War games are the best God of War games for sure. So yeah, that's my example, I think, of a game that got it just right.
I love that, actually. I'm glad to hear that. That is one of the ones that I was also considering. There's a lot of games I think that could go into this, right? There's a lot of games I think, and that's actually kind of crazy to imagine that if, for me in my mind, I could probably rattle off like a few dozen games at least off the top of my head, right? Where I'm just like, oh, these games are basically like just right for me. That God of War 2018 is one that I always go back to as a game that essentially just sort of hits every note about as perfectly as possible. You're exactly right about there's a flexibility to the combat. There's a nuance to it, but it isn't ever overly complicated. That's a huge thing. There's space to explore, but it never feels like languid, right? You're sort of always kind of moving forward. My memory of it is that it was only it's like a 12 hour long game if you're kind of just going through, which to me is a pretty good sweet spot. I enjoyed the second one too, Ragnarok. I enjoyed it a lot. It's a phenomenal game in so many ways. It's gorgeous. But it expanded outwards in a lot of ways that made me really appreciate more the relatively compact nature of the original God of War, and the writing is excellent. So yeah, so you go through the big set pieces, that's exciting, and then you settle down into the quieter moments where they talk. The dialogue is excellent, the voice acting is excellent, and it just it is a complete package, that game. I'm happy to hear that, because that is one of those ones where it's like, man is that game better than it had any right to be.
It's incredible. The button mashing nonsense and like M-rated, like, you know, PS2, games, like, it's just like, you know, press circle to see the boobs, like, you know, like, it was,
God,
like, that's, like, I they were fun for what they were and everything, but, like, I did not expect for them to, like, mature or evolve or become, like, this, you know, a landmark moment for, like, the PlayStation, you know, at the time there, like, that delivered way more than it needed to and had any right to and everything, too, but, I mean, maybe they, I mean, I don't want to undersell it. I mean, like, the really talented development team, but they had, you know, time and money and creativity all kind of thrown at them, and they were able to deliver on that, which probably wasn't necessarily easy, you know, in that moment.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that I'm learning as like someone who's relatively new to being directly involved in game development, right? Like I've done game adjacent stuff before, but in my role at Riot, I'm like much closer to it. And I've seen a bunch of the work that gets done up close. I haven't had to do too much of it, too much of the actual development, obviously. But the idea that anything of that scale can be put together that seamlessly and that with a vision that is as clear as that game is at that scale is mind-boggling to me. Like it's. Yeah, they have the money. Yeah, they had the time. I'm sure it took forever. But that is an achievement of organization, honestly, as much as anything else, probably. So seeing that thing come together, another game that feels that way, and I'll get into mine in a sec, but another game that sort of has the same vibes to me in terms of how the heck did they actually put this thing together and have it be cohesive is Breath of the Wild. I think about Breath of the Wild as another one of those where I'm like, there are so many places where this thing could have started to spin off and apart. And yet they just keep it all going together. Big team. It's a miracle. Video games are miracles. That's my scientific approach. They're miracles. But I can talk a little bit about two that I did choose for this thing. Sorry to throw you off there by asking you for yours first, but I was excited to hear it, actually. So I have two, and I'll only talk about the first one briefly because it's a puzzle game, and I don't know that I have the vocabulary to discuss puzzle games in a meaningful way. I think that there's something about the way they're put together that I feel like I'd just be out of my depth in. But the first game that I was thinking about when it comes to something that's just right is Cocoon. Did you play Cocoon, the puzzle game from Annapurna? And I'm looking at the developer here. I'm blanking right now. Listeners won't be able to see. It's a puzzle game. It's a puzzle game that came out, I want to say, in 2024. The years are all blending together. But it's a game that has you playing with space in a way that I've never seen in a video game before. Essentially, you're this little bug. It looks beautiful, too. It's gorgeous looking. It's got a great soundscape to it. But you're this little bug character who rolls around these balls, these marbles. And within each of these marbles are other stages, right? So if you can get the marble into a certain contraption, you can enter the marble and go into that world. But then you're in that world and there's another marble. So then you take that marble and move through, but you can pull that marble back out through the other marble and put the other marble back in the new one that you just brought out. And so you're playing with these sort of multi-dimensional puzzles that I truly cannot properly articulate here. But you're playing with these multi-dimensional puzzles that sound extremely overwhelming. They sound extremely intimidating. I remember when I was first looking at the game, I was like, this is going to be way too hard. And yet somehow the game keeps you moving at such a pace that you never feel truly, or I never felt truly lost. I would have to scratch my head a little bit, or I'd walk around and try a few things, but I was never stuck on one puzzle for more than honestly probably a couple of minutes. And so it managed to maintain that puzzle game thing, which I really love, of, you know, you're bumping up against something, it seems really hard, and then you figure it out and you feel like a genius. And so it's like this dopamine box. It just keeps giving you the feeling of being a genius over and over and over again as you complete these pretty brain warping puzzles. While it never makes you frustrated, I never wound up looking at a guide for any of the puzzles. Oftentimes in puzzle games, if I get over it, I'll just be like, "Ha, give me the answer." I never needed any of that here. So it's just one of those whole package games that I truly do not understand how they made it, because I'm not a puzzle game maker to begin with, so I don't understand how they make any puzzle games. But one of this level of creativity is out of control. Another good one, sort of not just like it, but that sort of meets a lot of the same things, is Arranger, which is more of like kind of a Sokoban game that came out last year as well. So two games to highlight if you like puzzle games. Arranger and Cocoon. So that's one. Yeah.
Cocoon, I definitely want to check that out. The director of it previously worked on Limbo and Inside.
That's right. I forgot. Yes, they came from there. And it's a very different game, but I think you can sort of see it in the game's vibe and look. It's nowhere near as scary or upsetting or as oppressive as those games, but it is it has a look and a feel to it that I really appreciate. So yeah, it's one of those games that's just a joy to be in the whole time.
Yeah, that sounds cool. It's on PlayStation. Not that it has to be on PlayStation, but you know, that's in my living room. I would prefer to play it, you know, sitting there. So I should definitely take a look at this.
It's also a game that I wound up playing on, I think I played it on either Xbox or PlayStation. Yeah, I played it on console, and I'm glad I did, because it gave me the chance to play on the big TV, right? As opposed to my Steam Deck. Because it's just beautiful. So yeah, TV, great place to play it. The other game that I was going to highlight here is a game that came out a little bit ago. I want to say, was it 2013? I'm going to look this up. It came out, excuse me, my throat, Bleak Sword. Bear with me. It came out 2013, I think. It is called Bleak Sword DX. The developer is More 8-Bit. Devolver published it. Are you familiar?
Yes. So this was a an Apple Arcade launch title.
Yes.
And I don't like to typically play on my phone. I just feel like I get distracted and stuff like that. But like the idea of, I mean, it just looked too cool. Like I had to play it. I had to give it a shot and everything. And then what's also cool is those Apple Arcade games are all across the Appleverse and everything. So on Apple TV, you could just pair up a controller and play it on there as well. And it was like a console experience for me. And that was my like way to bypass that like part in my brain that didn't let me do that. But yes, it did end up getting ported to other places, like a lot of those Apple Arcade titles have been. But I love Devolver. I love the look of this game, like the diorama style and the pixel art of it all. Like it's yes, very, very rad.
Hell yeah. No, it's I'm so happy to hear that you got it and that you got into it. I actually, and it's funny, I hadn't even thought about the Apple TV thing, as I knew it was out there on Apple Arcade. I knew it was going to be right up my alley. And yet I waited for a long time because I was like, I want this to come out on consoles, because this was a game that to me seemed so like the feel of it was so important that I just wanted a controller for that precision. I hadn't even thought about being able to do that there. So I did wind up waiting. And then I played it on my Steam Deck, and that was, I mean, like almost immediately just maybe my favorite game of the year, when it came out, because it's just, you know, like you pointed it out, it looks amazing. It's very simple seeming, right? The sprites, the character art, it all looks like a 2600 game. But it is, there's depth to the little dioramas, the way they kind of make it look like you're looking into a TV. It's not quite looking into a TV. There's sort of the CRT filter, but that's very subtle and blurry a little. It just has a look to it that I've never really seen in a game. And more than anything, it is I think a towering achievement of the thing that I enjoy most in a video game, which is you are given a skill or a small set of tools, and it's up to you to just get really good at them. And by virtue of just getting really good at them, you're going to be able to make it through. This is a game that could have easily been a roguelike kind of game too. And it's a challenging game, so I feel like that could have been where they would have gone with it, but I'm grateful that they didn't. Structurally, I love that it's level based, because it means that you can pop in and just do your best, you know, bang your head against a level a couple of times, see where you get. And I would find that basically anytime I sat down to play, even if it was just for 15 or 20 minutes, I would make some progress either by getting better at that specific encounter or by moving on to the next one. So really, to me, it's just the whole package. It's not super long. It's not impossible, but it is very challenging. And you are tasked with just becoming very good at like, what, two attacks, heavy and light, dodge and move. And that to me is like gaming heaven.
Yeah. I mean, they gave themselves a limitation. I mean, because it was designed that you could play it all with like touch controls, which aren't necessarily as like haptically like responsive like a controller would be and everything. So it was like a simple setup, or at least like that creativity through limitation. Like, hey, let's limit what it is that we can do, and just, you know, stretch to like our bounds of what that is within those limitations and everything. And so it's really cool. I mean, essentially like that vibe is like attached to all the aspects of it, like the art design, like the visuals and everything. It's seen a screenshot of it, yeah, you question like what generation this was released on and everything and like what it is, but like then seeing it in motion and it's like a whole different like story. Like yeah, it's just got like that style and charm and everything. I've like Devolver, as much as a fanboy as I am of like PlayStation and everything, like Devolver is like the publisher that like when I see their name on something, like I'm like, okay, this is gonna be like rad, it's gonna be neat, it's gonna come from left field. Like I just expect to be excited and surprised by whatever it may be, you know, whether that's Titan Souls or the original Ollie Ollie 1 and 2, Hotline Miami, or, you know, I mean, they've done so many crazy things. So once, the Apple Arcade stuff was coming and there was going to be a Devolver Digital title, I'm like, I don't care what it is, I can just shake my phone and I'm sure it'll be like really cool. So like, let's figure this out. Bleak Sword is super cool.
I'm with you on all that, and the Devolver love as well. It's just, you know, I mean, to your point, it's like you look at it and you're like, okay, it's a publisher, and these are all different developers, and these are all very different experiences too. They do sort of sometimes have a bit of a house style in terms of sort of the vibe of things, but they don't necessarily have a house style in terms of the game experiences themselves. And so you're getting a pretty diverse range of experiences. And I think that that's fantastic. And yeah, so yeah, exact same thing. When I saw that this was coming, when I saw that Devolver was in, I was like, man, let's give this a shot. And I was rewarded handsomely. Yeah, I just love it. My only complaint was I was sad when it was over. It was one of those ones where it ended, and I think it ended at the right spot. You don't want these games to go on forever, right? But it ended at the right spot, but I just kept thinking about how much fun it was that I could keep just sitting down on my Steam Deck and playing some Bleak Sword every day over the course of a couple of weeks. And a game like this, too, you know, what makes a just right game for me these days is probably different than what would have made a just right game for me back when I was 25. You know, like a just right game for me now probably has to be something that I can step away from, right? That I don't need to maintain constant contact with in order to know where I'm going. And so something like this, level-based, small encounter-based, you know, it's just when you match that with the excellence of the feel and everything. I mean, like those hits, when you nail a hit mm-hmm. in that game, it feels potent. Mm-hmm. So for me, this is way up there. This is one of those games where, like, anytime someone asks what's a good game to play, it's Bleak Sword DX. That's my answer.
Yeah, you can play it on Switch and PC now as well, too. It's not just on the Apple world. I still want, like, a PlayStation release, you know. Give me some trophies. Yeah. Let me integrate it into my ecosystem that I have set up already. But it's still a worthwhile game to seek out for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we did that again. That's another Woo. Episode in the books. That is the episode. And I appreciate you for coming on, Nick. I know, again, to spoil it all, you did just record an episode previously with me, but is there anything you'd like to plug or share? Would you like people to follow you on social media? Anything you'd like to say before we do wrap it up with this Just Right episode?
Eagle-eared listeners will remember that last time I spelled out my Twitch URL. I don't have to do that now that I'm realizing, of course, that it is in the show notes. So I'm on Blue Sky, McConnell.bsky.social, and Twitch, twitch.tv/Nick McConnell. That's me Wednesdays at noon Pacific. I learned that I was like, yeah, noon. I was like, wait, what? Noon what? Noon Pacific. Try to do about an hour of that and just sort of enjoy them video game manuals. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for jumping on. So we'll definitely do some more episodes in the future. You have my master list of questions, but we can always dip back into that that evergreen question, you know, personal favorite game or an average game that doesn't get enough attention. Like, that's eventually what this show will evolve into, and I'm okay with that. And before then, if you have any other questions you want to answer, hit me back up. You're welcome anytime on the show, Nick. So thanks a lot.
Woo, thank you.